From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, two recent reports show Governor Cuomo may face his most difficult budget in 7 years. Our political observer Alan Shartok shares his thoughts on some of the problems the governor faces going forward for re-election. And the Nuclear Regulatory Commission issues an inspection report on Indian Point. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. Two reports issued in recent days indicate that Governor Cuomo may be facing his most difficult budget in 7 years. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports.
The mid-year financial report by the governor's budget office has lowered revenue estimates by $850 million for the current budget year as well as the next 2 years. And it finds that next year's projected deficit is now $4.4 billion. That's if spending growth continues unchecked. Cuomo began sounding the alarm weeks before the report was released.
The state is already facing a $4 billion deficit going into next year. $4 billion deficit.
The governor's budget office report says the disappointing tax collections are at odds with key economic indicators, which signal an improving economy. And it speculates that anticipation of the federal tax overhaul might be affecting taxpayers' behavior. Wealthier taxpayers might be holding back on cashing in investments while they wait to see if Congress makes changes to the tax code that could result in more advantageous tax rates. The state's controller, Tom DiNapoli, in his mid-year budget report, also finds revenues are down and are around $700 million lower than expected. He says New York faces a triple threat of the projected budget gap, weaker personal income tax collections, and cuts to federal programs. E.J. McMahon, with the fiscal watchdog group the Empire Center, has worked for previous administrations and helped craft state budgets. He says 2018 is not going to be easy for Cuomo and state lawmakers.
It's going to be his most challenging, the governor's and the legislature's most challenging budget cycle since 2011.
When Cuomo first took office in 2011, he closed a $10 billion projected budget gap that he inherited from the previous governor. The state had been hard hit by the financial crisis of 2008. Since then, Cuomo has not had to slash major programs or make deep budget cuts. The governor's budgets have grown more slowly than those under his predecessors. He's managed to limit spending growth to around 2% per year. McMahon says Cuomo's kept a lid on spending without making major changes to state government because he's benefited from several events over the past few years. First, the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare, offered federal funding for multiple health care programs through the expansion of Medicaid. Health care in New York expanded without relying heavily on state funds. Second, New York was the beneficiary of $10 billion from bank settlements. Those stemmed from penalties imposed after the financial crisis. McMahon calls that an enormous piece of luck.
Completely unprecedented. No state has ever experienced anything like it in this short period of time.
But that money is now slowing to a trickle. The biggest challenge for state budget makers is the swirling uncertainty over federal policy. The Republican-led Congress has so far failed in its attempt to repeal and replace Obamacare, but efforts could be revived at any time. Under plans considered so far, the state would lose billions of dollars in funding. The federal tax overhaul proposals would also adversely affect the state budget, as well as many taxpayers. Cuomo has railed against a provision to eliminate state and local tax deductions from federal income tax payments.
So it is a tax on your taxes. This from a party that said they wanted to cut your tax. It's the first double taxation that we can come up with.
In the long term, the loss of the deduction will only deepen the state's deficits. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. Alan, an interesting conversation with Ken Lovett, Albany Bureau Chief of the New York Daily News, about the dueling mayor and governor of New York. We're talking about de Blasio and Governor Andrew Cuomo, of course, and the idea that both want to run for president and could perhaps hurt each other in the process.
Well, as you know, David, I've been saying this for a long time. This goes back way back in New York. We've seen it before. John V. Lindsay and Rockefeller both wanted to be president. They both gave each other such a hard time that neither got there. Right now you have Cuomo clearly running for president just in California, you know, with the same old movie stars raising money for him, a spate of stories, one in the New York Times, which basically said that Cuomo gets no small money, very, very, very little small money from small donors a la Bernie. But depends on the big boys backing him in these parties and these immense amounts of money that you have to get to go. But as I've been saying, and as certainly Ken Lovett said, there is a problem here in that the city is always a creature of the state. The mayor will have to come to the governor hat in hand. The governor will be running for governor. He has to win. He's surrounded by corruption trials and things of some of his former associates. I doubt very much that this mayor, de Blasio, who's not all that popular himself, is going to start taking on the governor of New York. And we know that the governor doesn't like it when people start up with him, even if then he's not right. His perception is that, much like I've said it before, I'll say it again, Donald Trump, these are guys who get even when somebody gives them a hard time.
The run for president doesn't come before the run for governor, and that's re-election for Governor Andrew Cuomo. A number of things could cause problems, one being the very nature of the budget that's coming. Two, analysis now, as our Karen DeWitt reports this week on the program, show that the governor may face the most difficult budget in 7 years.
That's right. And this is not a good time to have this happening because he's coming up for his election first as governor, which everybody expects he's going to win running away. He's got $26-27 million in his campaign account. We know that he is very interested in running for president. Anybody who doesn't say that to you, no matter what he says, is just full of baloney. The guy's out in California raising money. This is a guy who had trouble leaving New York State in the past, as did his father. But he is running for governor in 18, and then in 20, he wants to be the presidential candidate. And as we know, he's a real tough guy and doesn't suffer his political opponents easily, or even those he may be wrong about who he considers to be his political opponents. So he's got to make a series of decisions. Now, the budget could break wide open. It's not good to begin with. The collections, the tax collections aren't coming in the way that they're supposed to be. It looks bad. And now we have a president of the United States and a Republican Senate and House, which are coming up with plans that would basically throw the budget really off by not allowing the deduction, for example, of state and local taxes from people's taxes. It would put a real crimp in New York State real estate and everything else. And he knows it. So if that happens, that could just throw him off the presidential rails.
Not to mention muddying the waters with the coming trials of his close associates.
David, we've talked about it so many times, I'm almost getting bored. But basically, his top people, one of whom is his brother, who he mentioned in Mario Cuomo's eulogy, is not his brother, real brother, but his make-believe brother, the one that, quote, Mario really loved. He turns out to be really challenged ethically, according to the prosecutors, and he's going to have to face a trial. Now, we all know that trials can end either in mistrials or not guilty verdicts. In this case, it looks like there's an awful lot of smoke. When there's smoke, there's fire.
Meantime, on the Republican side, after the defeat of Westchester County Executive Rob Astorino, the Republicans lost their perhaps number one candidate for governor. And as you spoke with Ken Lovett, that opens it up now for a man named Harry Wilson.
Well, Harry Wilson, who is apparently a mild-mannered guy and who reminds me a little bit only in the way people perceive him as a George Pataki type. In other words, he is a guy who would not inflame people, say, with the usual Republican rhetoric. He's a guy, for example, who believes in a woman's right to an abortion. Well, in New York State, that's pretty interesting in that, as we talked with Ken Lovett, usually they say, well, I'm not for it personally, but the law is the law. He's saying, I'm for abortion. I'm for a woman's right to have an abortion, and the law is the law. So he would be more of a Rockefeller type of guy. But what really interests these people is the fact that he has so much money. And as a result of having much money, he can put maybe $10 million of his own into a campaign against $27 million in his account, Cuomo.
Speaking of a man named Wilson, Alan, the online petition to change the name of the governor, Mario M. Cuomo Bridge, is being derided by the governor's office as a partisan effort, but thousands have signed this petition to take the former governor's name off the Tappan Zee Bridge.
Well, first of all, Mario Cuomo is a very good friend of mine, as you all, as everybody knows, because, you know, he and I had a radio program for years and years and years. And Mario Cuomo was the last guy who ever wanted anything named after him. You know, he had a very strong, almost religious belief in diminishing his own gets. So one could only think that Mario Cuomo would not like his name on that bridge. Pete Seeger didn't want his name on bridges either. We know that. So these are great men, and that should be kept in mind. Nevertheless, Andrew Cuomo loved his father, and I happen to know his father loved him. So there is no question to me that he has done this in order to honor the old man. I understand that. But I also hate the idea that people are using these bridges and these things to name Democrats and Republicans to them. In the case of the bridge, it used to be named the Tappan Zee, which is an Indian-Dutch combination, used to be the Malcolm Wilson Bridge. Now, Malcolm Wilson's daughter is out saying, hey, that's not right. Should stay the Malcolm Wilson Bridge. I hate the idea that Ed Koch has a thing named after him and Kerry has a thing named after him. And even the icon Robert Kennedy, you know, the Triborough Bridge. I think this is a very bad idea. I know where it started, but I don't like it.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chardon. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Last January, Patrick Nelson became the first Democrat to enter the race against newly reelected incumbent Congresswoman Elise Stefanik, a Republican from New York's 21st District. It's been a crowded primary field since then, spurred by discontent over Congress's health care deliberations. Nelson sat down with the Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley and tells her that health care remains the key issue across the district.
I think health care got thrown into the forefront early in this campaign with that vote for the disastrous package that Elise Stefanik supported, Congresswoman Stefanik supported in the House. And that really galvanized a lot of people because it's very threatening personally, right? Because we're talking about one of the very intimate areas where when we're interfacing with the healthcare system, it's usually not on our best day. You know, with the exception of maybe a child being born, we're there because something is frightening us. And when you're compounding that with, am I even going to be able to see a doctor if something comes along? I think that has really lit a fire under a lot of people, me personally and a lot of people we've talked to. So that's still at the forefront. And it is kind of an all-encompassing issue because it also impacts the ability to grow jobs. You know, if you're unsure about your healthcare future, you might stay in a job where you might otherwise leave and start a business or what have you because of the health insurance plan that you're under. So it's an issue of economic development at the same time as it's an issue of healthcare. So that's been a real fundamental issue in this campaign. You know, the other ones are jobs.
I want to talk a bit about money. The FEC fundraising reports came out in October, and in the list of the Democratic primary candidates for New York 21, you are fourth, so you are in the middle of the pack. What do you make about where you are in your fundraising efforts?
Well, when we launched this campaign, I made it really clear that I did not have a lot of wealthy friends to draw on. Whereas some candidates may be able to make a phone call and ask for $400 or $1,000, sometimes I'm getting $40. And this is why we need to move to a publicly financed system of elections, where the issues becomes then who has the best ideas and the best policies to move forward, not who knows the most people that are wealthy that can write large checks to their campaign. And while we may not be able to turn it up as loud as some other people, I think we'll cut through because we're talking about the issues that genuinely impact people and we're talking about solutions that move us forward. Things like Medicare for All, like mobilizing on climate change, like having a living wage of $15 an hour for working people in this district, like having a foreign policy of diplomacy. We're talking about those issues. We're putting them to the forefront. And I believe ultimately that's going to lead to our success as a campaign.
Ideologically, that's good, but there are some practical matters when it comes to money, like travel, and obviously there will eventually be advertising. Do you worry that you are at a disadvantage at this point?
What really still works is getting out and talking to people, knocking on doors. That is the most effective way of contacting voters. Then ultimately, I think we'll be able to turn out the vote necessary to secure the nomination.
Patrick Nelson, one thing that we can't ignore is that your father, who is the mayor of Stillwater, was arrested recently on child pornography charges. First of all, how are you and your family in the wake of that?
Yeah, we're as well as can be expected under the circumstances. There's been a lot of community support for my family. Certainly, you know, our relatives are there for us. You know, we're working through it day by day. I mean, it came as a shock to us. And, you know, it has been emotionally challenging, I'm not going to lie, personally and with the family. And it's something that, you know, we're working through. In regards to the campaign, I'll leave it at this. A lot of people get arrested every day who aren't me, and it doesn't affect my campaign. Ultimately, this is someone getting arrested that wasn't me. So in the eyes of the voters, I hope that they can look past that and focus on who I am as Patrick Nelson as an individual and not I'm not an extension of my father. I'm my own person. And I'll leave it at that.
Patrick Nelson, you have been trained as a scientist, and you've also been an activist. What can you bring to Congress as a scientist and an activist?
I have a bachelor's of science in biochemistry. There's a certain humility that goes along with understanding the scientific process and then adaptability to new information. And I think that that's something that if we had more of that in our public policy, we would recognize the severity of the threat of climate change and react to it appropriately. We wouldn't be arguing about how to reduce healthcare costs. You cannot do what is right if you don't first do to the best of your ability understand what is true.
During a visit to Plattsburgh in August, incumbent Republican Elise Stefanik said regardless of the number of challengers, she is focused on her job and delivering results to the district.
I feel confident, but I'm going to focus on doing my job because that's why they voted for me, because they know I'm energetic, I'm hardworking, and I'm common sense and independent-minded and an effective voice for this district in Washington.
The other six candidates seeking the Democratic nomination in the 21st House District are Emily Martz of Saranac Lake, Don Boyajian of Saratoga County, Ronald Kim of Queensbury and Saratoga Springs, Tedra Cobb of Potsdam, Katie Wilson of Keene, and Tanya Boone from Granville. Republican Russell Finley of Lisbon in St. Lawrence County is looking to force a Republican primary.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission recently released its third quarter inspection report for the Indian Point Nuclear Power Plant. The Westchester County-based plant has experienced O-ring leakage on and off for years, and the NRC says efforts to resolve the issue have not been entirely successful. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn explains.
NRC spokesman Neil Sheehan says the issue has persisted for many years at both Units 2 and 3.
They had a design change going back to 2003 where the company has tried to resolve this problem. This involves these O-rings that are stainless steel gaskets, very large in size. They are big enough to maintain a tight seal between the reactor vessel head and the reactor vessel itself, and not only do that, but do it under very high temperature and pressure conditions.
In fact, Indian Point 3 was shut down in June 2017 for planned maintenance to replace two O-rings or water seals. Again, Sheehan.
When they started up from the Unit 3 last refueling outage last spring, they started to see a steady increase in unidentified leakage within the containment building. And so they've had to switch from the inner O-ring to the outer O-ring, which is, you know, that's not a normal operating condition. And so that's one example of why this continues to garner some interest.
Jerry Nappi is spokesman for Indian Point parent company, Entergy.
This is an issue that, you know, we've had recur a few times. We have a plan in place to try to prevent recurrence. I mean, I think one thing folks should know is that this leak of water is entirely contained with inside the reactor building. It's a relatively small leak. There actually is no leak ongoing at this time. There's two sets of seals to prevent leakage.
That plan to prevent recurrence, as outlined in the NRC's quarterly inspection report, includes conducting laser measurement and mapping of the surface defects during the next refueling outage on each unit.
We have a few new enhancements we're going to make. We're going to take more closer measurements of the groove in which the seal sits. Engineers are going to update procedures to make sure there's more adherence to the procedures as they replace these seals periodically. And we're going to ultimately just continue to monitor the situation closely. There's no safety challenge from this very small leakage. And again, that water is contained inside the building.
That's not assuring to Richard Webster. He's legal director for Riverkeeper.
It's a big concern for us that this O-ring problem isn't being solved. It seems like Entergy is trying to ignore the problem rather than solve it. And it looks like production pressures are leading them to rush the repairs so that they don't really work. And so we think that what they should do is take the time, take an outage, and really try and fix the problem.
And Webster comments on Entergy's plan to prevent leakage recurrence.
It's certainly too late. Time will tell whether it's too little.
Indian Point is closing by 2021. An agreement reached by New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, Entergy, and Riverkeeper announced in January. Meantime, the NRC Sheehan says there have been no violations related to the water leaks from O-rings.
They have a limit as far as how much leakage they can get from the reactor vessel, and they have not exceeded that at this point. But nevertheless, this is an issue that they would obviously like to see put to bed. And that we would like to see them fully resolve. And so we're pointing out in our quarterly inspection report that this is an issue that warrants continued attention, and it's going to be an area that continues to receive follow-up from the NRC.
Sheehan says the NRC has seen O-ring leakage at other plants, but not to the extent as at Buchanan-based Indian Point.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1746. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare online at nysut.org.